Je te laisserai des mots. Written by RJSLV and read by Wilfriede0815. Fandoms, Hated Rivalry, Game Changer Series, This Is How You Lose the Time War. Relationship, Shane Hollander / Ilya Rosanoff. Additional tags, Alternate Universe Fusion, Science Fiction, Time Travel, Secret Relationship. Summary. It's Hollander's work. Ilya knows it with one glance. The structure is too orderly, laid out neatly according to plan. There are redundancy loops and opposing threads twisted together for stability. It's precise, complex, beautiful to witness. It will be a fucking nightmare for Ilya to pick apart. This is why the Time War has lasted so long, why it feels unending. Every action Ilya takes will be countered by a voyageur. Every one of their moves will be undone in turn. Or, this is how you lose the Ice War. Chapter 1. Countdown to a Hot Mess. Most people would probably say the worst thing about an ice age is the cold. It is cold. It's fucking freezing. Keeping it that way is the entire reason Ilya is here. He spent days releasing sulfur dioxide aerosols above the troposphere and thickening the sea ice. He sprayed seawater into the thick stratocumulus clouds that blanket the sea, so much that the air tastes salty when he sucks his lower lip absently between his teeth. His efforts have already paid off. The strand will be -0.2 degrees Celsius cooler than any other timeline within the next 1,000 years. Throwing off the glacial-interglacial cycle normally balanced by the Earth's obliquity. Ilya's actions will change the course of the entire planet. His breath clouds the air when he exhales. The temperature is still above freezing point at the height of each day, but not by much. Ilya has been bundled up inside his waterproof thermal suit since he arrived. The bitter cold isn't what gets to him, though. It's the isolation. The pristine, desolate landscape that stretches unbroken for kilometers in every direction. That's enough to drive a person mad. Something flickers in his vision. Ilya scans the horizon until he catches it again. A flash of reflective silver, out of place against the snowy, prehistoric backdrop. He checks his conducted energy weapon first, confirming that it holds a full electroshock charge. Whatever's out there is too far away to reach him anytime soon, but he isn't taking any chances with the megafauna that roam these ice sheets. Even the beavers have teeth nearly as big as his dick. Ilya's optic lenses are polarized to filter high-frequency visible light and ultraviolet radiation. He'd have been snowblind days ago otherwise. He switches to an infrared filter and checks again, adjusting the magnification to see what's out there. There's someone out on the ice, bipedal and roughly Ilya's size, wearing a padded parka trimmed with actual organic mammal fur. It could be a hallucination, but Ilya doesn't think so. If his mind were playing tricks, it's more likely to conjure a giant dancing bear. The hominins in the strand wouldn't have high-visibility reflective patches sewn onto their sleeves or synthetic traction studs on their boots. At least not until many centuries from now. Which means, this must be another agent. Ilya's caught glimpses of a hunter dogging his missions across a few strands before now, but this isn't the same man. It's not anyone from Ilya's side. He'd recognize the tech. And he'd remember that face. The voyageurs take after the boatman for which they're named, crawling up thread and down like they're ferrying goods along a river. Direct encounters with enemy agents are rare, but with so many foot soldiers deployed across threads of time, sometimes conflict is inevitable. Whatever this agent is doing here, it can't be good for Ilya or his mission. Cursing, he activates the satellite link to a constellation of mirrors high overhead. He launched them into space a few days ago to reduce the amount of solar energy that enters the atmosphere. The receivers blink red on his wristband. Signal lost. He doesn't need to squint through the fat white clouds to confirm the mirrors have been knocked out of the sky. The voyageur across the ice is investigating one of Ilya's largest cultivated glaciers. They're separated by distance and a wide expanse of ice-crusted sea. He doesn't appear hostile, which honestly comes as a surprise to Ilya. He expected to need his energy weapon after all. The other agent seems to be taking measurements, precise calculations that involve Tribrax and theodolites. Every so often he pauses to study Ilya before moving on to the next point on his invisible map. There's a moment of mutual uncertainty after the voyageur finishes his calculations and packs away his gear. He faces Ilya across the ice, hands held awkwardly at his sides like he's not sure what comes next. He waves. Ilya curses again. Not that he thinks the voyageur can hear him at this distance. He hikes his pack higher up onto his shoulder, and is weighing whether or not to risk a close engagement, when the other agent turns and walks away. He must have done whatever he'd been sent here to do. Unravel Ilya's work in deflecting solar radiation, almost certainly. The voyageur must intend to make the planet more habitable in the relatively near future. This is why the war has lasted so long, why it feels unending. Every action Ilya takes will be countered by a voyageur. Every one of their moves, in turn, will be undone by someone on his side. The snow muffles everything, turns the world silent and oppressive. The crack of breaking ice cuts through that quiet like a sharp knife. The sound grows louder, cracks layering over one another until they're eclipsed by the low groan of an unstable terminus. Ilya knows that sound in his bones. It's a warning to get off the fucking ice. There's a distant thundering boom, and then a massive chunk of ice begins to tilt and break away. More pieces shear off and fall, setting off violent waves as they crash into the water below. Ilya stands impotent on his side of the ice, watching his beautiful, load-bearing glacier carve into the frigid sea. He could go up there to try again, but he doesn't see the point. The voyageurs know he's here and what he's trying to do. There's nothing stopping the other agent from following him to another point in the timeline. They'll waste their energy trading brief victories instead of pursuing a real advantage. Ilya's wristband blinks. The satellite link has been re-established. One of his space reflectors is broadcasting a signal. The voyageur has left a message. By the time you read this, I'll have reported back to management and they'll be monitoring the strand. I wouldn't stick around if I were you. Your solar geoengineering is really impressive. I've never seen surface albedo increase through technology like this before. You shouldn't mess around with planetary temperature, but in another 14,000 years, carbon emissions and global warming will be a real problem. This is good work. Good luck out there. I hope you end up somewhere warmer next time. Shane breathes in the grimy air of Strand 1410 and tastes ash. He imagines it lining his windpipe, settling in his lungs like sediment at the bottom of a river. The chromatophores under his skin keep trying to shift, reorienting plates and translocating pigments, confused into metachrosis. He walks through pre-amalgamation Toronto like it's his own personal Stabier. The burnt-out skeletons of blackened buildings stretch out on either side of Shane as he approaches the intersection. The poor visibility isn't the only reason his nerves are twitching. There's every chance he's walking into an ambush. Most of what Shane knows about this mission is inference and rumor. The raiders had made the initial overture, a one-time exchange of information pertaining to select agents who had been confirmed lost in the war. After some negotiation, the voyageur had agreed. The raiders have sent Rosanoff to make the exchange. That part isn't a surprise. Rosanoff has thwarted several of Shane's recent missions, untangling threads Shane had carefully braided and throwing the voyageur's plans into chaos. He exemplifies the raider's combat style, popping up with no warning to launch a sudden and devastating attack before vanishing without a trace. Shane would have been more annoyed if he hadn't known he was just as much of a problem for the raiders. Instead of frustrating him, Rosanoff drives him to work harder, to think faster. He wonders if the raiders have noticed, if that's why they requested Shane specifically to make this exchange. Rosanoff waits for him at the intersection, slouched against the crumbling brick wall scorched black by the fire. He straightens up when Shane arrives, hands in his pockets. The casual, bored attitude might be intended as an insult, but Shane's tight shoulders relax by a few degrees. Rosanoff wouldn't be peacocking like this in plain sight if the plan was to snipe Shane from a broken window and steal the data drive. Shane stops a few meters away, just close enough that he doesn't have to raise his voice. Did you bring it?
Bring what?
Rozanov makes a show of checking his coat pockets and flipping back the edge of his wool cloak. He rolls his eyes when Shane opens his mouth again.
Of course I brought it.
He holds out a brown, leather-bound journal. When Shane hesitates, Rozanov gives it an impatient little shake. Shane walks the rest of the way over to take the book out of his hand. He unwraps the leather thong that binds the journal closed, cracking open the cover just enough to confirm the presence of a storage drive hidden inside. It's more trust than Shane would have shown. Another voyageur might have tried their luck by cutting and running. Now that he has the drive, however, he fulfills his own side of the bargain without hesitation. The microchip is glossy black and small enough to nearly disappear when Shane tips it onto Rozanov's glove. Rozanov stares down at it, his brow pinched, then looks back up at Shane.
What the fuck is this?
Shane opens his mouth, then closes it again. He's not sure he understands the question.
A subdermal implant? The database should interface with any major operating system. The corrupted files have been quarantined, but they were included with the recovered files, just in case your side could do anything with them. It's all on there, he finishes lamely.
He sounds more defensive than he ought to, but Rozanov is staring at him like he's a two-headed fish. Rozanov mutters something that Shane can't understand. It sounds like Russian. Shane wonders if they're having translation issues.
Chip?
He tries again, gesturing with his thumb and forefinger closed together. He taps the base of his skull, the most common location for an accessible terminal. When Rozanov's expression doesn't change, Shane blurts out without thinking,
Do you not know how to read it?
Why would I know how to read this?
Rozanov sounds incredulous. Shane doesn't know how to answer. The idea of not having embedded microchips is such a foreign one that he's still wrapping his head around it. Rozanov gives up on waiting for him and thrusts the microchip back toward Shane.
You read it.
What?
Shane holds up his hands reflexively in a warning gesture. No, it's yours. Rozanov waves the chip in an impatient little circle.
You tell me what it says. I will record.
It's classified.
Panic starts to rise in Shane's throat. This is a critical mission, with potentially devastating consequences if it fails, and it's already going sideways.
I'm not supposed to see what's on there.
But you can access the data, yes?
Rozanov gestures again, annoyed now. Chop, chop.
You know how?
Yeah, of course, but...
Shane bites off the rest of his protest. Management might tear him apart for stealing military secrets. But he doesn't see an alternative. Rozanov clearly isn't going anywhere until he's gotten what he was sent here for. In his place, Shane wouldn't either.
Fine. I should be able to project it. Do you have a visual recorder?
Obviously,
Rozanov says, like Shane's the idiot for asking when Rozanov is the one who can't read microchips. The terminal on the inside of Shane's wrist is the most convenient. He pulls off his gloves and slides his thumbnail under the loose flap of skin at the base of his palm. He's acutely aware of Rozanov watching as he slots the microchip into the exposed terminal. He takes a deep breath before accessing the database, and immediately regrets it.
What is it? Rozanov asks sharply.
He must have seen Shane's face twist as he tried not to cough, and misinterpreted it as a reaction to the data. Shane shakes his head.
Nothing, it's fine. I don't like the smoke.
Rozanov raises an eyebrow.
You shouldn't have set the city on fire.
I didn't.
Shane cuts himself off and raises his wrist. Are you ready to record? Rozanov smirks at him. He has a generous mouth, a square jaw, sharp cheekbones. Shane feels the back of his neck flush, prickles of heat crawling under his skin. His chromatophores must be acting up again.
Go ahead, Rozanov tells him. Put on a show for me.
Jane, see how clever I am using code names. You were so worried about doing something wrong, not being the perfect agent. Now if anyone else reads this, no one will know it's meant for you. The information exchange was my idea,
I wanted to see you again, to see more of you than the trails you leave behind you in time. Would you have come if you'd known it was for me? I think if you didn't want to be alone with me, you wouldn't have been here. I think you were curious. See you around, Lily.
End of chapter 1.